So you're listening to the Designer Dcast. I'm Jay, the creative storytelling specialist from Brenworth, and with me today is our super talented guest, architect Ollie Booth. Let's get stuck in. Right. So the first one is just literally, you know, I know who you are.
Yep.
Done a bit of research and found out about you, but for those who don't know who you are, just tell us a bit about yourself, Ollie.
Yeah, I'm Ollie from Ollie Booth Architecture. Started practice sort of 8 years ago and work closely alongside my partner, Libby, who's recently come into the practice. And it's an enjoyable time right now.
How did it all start, bro? Like, what got you into architecture? Like,
I think I was fortunate to grow up in a wider family who encouraged creativity from a young age. So we used to spend hours and hours with our cousins creating these worlds and environments around us. And we were lucky to have this sort of eccentric collection of aunties and grandparents who each had their own crafts and skills that they passed on to us that might have been, you know, music, woodwork or art. And so that really came through for all of us, actually. And that exposure and combination of these skills led us sort of all in a similar space. And I guess the best way for me to express this was through creating homes for the characters and objects in our lives at the time. So we're fascinated by how inanimate objects, you know, could bring on worlds of their own. So we'd craft everything together, whether it's sort of through woodwork or sewing, and our holidays were just consumed by these other worlds. And yeah, it was really, really enjoyable. And I guess as time went by, that scale changed, and my cousin and I used to scheme how we might construct sort of cabins on this remote Banks Peninsula island and live this sort of life of solitude. And yeah, as time went by, he became a builder, which is quite handy, and so maybe one day that will become reality. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So have you ever worked with your cousin?
Yeah, yep, lived with him, worked with him. Yeah, he's come from a range of different backgrounds in music and now building. So yeah, we're very aligned and alike, and it's great.
Oh, that's so cool, man. So that's how it all began. And where did you go to study? Like, what was that part of your journey like?
Yeah, I went to Victoria University in Wellington in 2008, and that's where I met Libby. And yeah, it was a fantastic 5 years. It was such a great place to live as well, just sort of that concentrated energy living in the middle of the city. And we all sort of benefited so much from that.
And what were, like, I guess, outside of the paper and, you know, that the academic side, what were your biggest learnings from being, I guess, immersed in that environment?
It was doing when you had the opportunities to work on real life projects. So a lot of the time, you know, there would be local architects that will sort of come in and you'll sort of learn about their experiences with every practice. But I remember one case where there was this sort of international competition where older students were producing this house that went called the Solid Decathlon, and it went to the States, and everyone got on board and contributed in some like very small way. But it was such a nice experience to produce something real off paper.
That's sick. So I guess then that's where you kind of refined your style, learning and seeing older peers and talking to lecturers. So how would you describe your, I guess, style and approach to architecture?
I think our process fundamentally starts with an understanding of context and behaviours. So context being the site and environment, and then behaviours are about people and how they live their life and their routines. So the combination of these two elements create, you know, what we call moments, and these become embedded throughout the space and ultimately inform the response. And this understanding of context and behaviours becomes hugely important to us as it sort of creates a platform for connection. And this connection allows a bond between people, the space and the landscape in which we place this architecture. And it sort of becomes deeply personal and tailored to their lifestyles.
That's cool. Yeah. So do you feel like your framework is locked in, but there's enough dynamism, like flexibility within it, that you can adapt and change to lots of things? Or
yeah,
do you feel you're still growing and learning?
Like, oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the best part about it is that you're working with people in place. So those inherently are always so different wherever you go. And sometimes it could just be a small token that someone brings along to the start of a project, and that really informs and drives the whole process. And yeah, that's where the collaboration comes in. It's sort of, it's not top down, it's sort of very flat, and everyone brings a lot to the table, which is nice.
And by no means am I anywhere near as creative or talented as you, but in my sort of creative pursuits, I think a big thing for me is always trying to be original and unique and mm-hmm. and kind of have your own style.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the biggest challenges, we're so readily influenced by everything around us. Like, how do you kind of cut out your own style within, I guess, a sea of so much?
Yeah, it is hard to sort of put it all to the side. I think it always comes back to sort of context and letting place speak to what you create, because ultimately, if you sort of listen and learn from what's around you, and specifically to those sites, they then bring along a whole lot of challenges and opportunities to create something that's specific to that place. And when you sort of step back at the end of it, I think if you can realize that, that's sort of a successful result.
And you mentioned, you know, at uni is where you met Libby.
Yep.
And now you work together.
Yes.
And you're in a relationship together.
Yeah.
So how do you, how's your working relationship? Like, who's the boss? what are your strengths?
Libby. Yeah. It's so special. She's my best friend. She's my collaborator and partner, but it just works. And I think we've got the right balance of sort of dream catcher and pragmatism, where that balance allows us to be productive. You know, a little bit too much the other way becomes quite difficult. So, yeah, I set up the studio 8 years ago, and Libby's recently come on board after working in local practices for the last few years too. We've always collaborated on the front end of projects together, and really enjoyed that process. And so I think because we got together early on in our architecture careers, our sort of views towards architecture have grown together. So it means that when we're sort of engaging in a process, like, we often find we're quite aligned, not always, but it's just a nice level. You know, we're not sort of, yeah, fundamentally our core values are the same.
That's important, right? I think, yeah. I think in life, in all pursuits, is, yeah, if you have the same, I guess, morals or the ethos is, you know, the same, we call it culture,
yes.
Not the literal meaning of culture, not culture in regards to a person's individual culture. But if you share or care for the same things, so I guess mm-hmm. that's what culture means, to care. I think it's easier then to collaborate and work together, because you kind of attract like-minded people, right?
Definitely, yeah. And draw the best out of people. No, that's great.
And what's Libby's biggest strength? Like, let's give her some props.
She's not here today. So many. But I think ultimately, like, her belief in the process, so, like, once the direction's formed, she's so good at delivering what that is to a really high level. So it's one thing to have this idea, but another to articulate it and realize it. And so she can really take something and sort of get it through so well. And we found that worked quite well a couple of years ago when we created our own home. We sort of had this balance of, you know, working on paper, working in sort of in real life or on site, and we sort of just chop and change with each other quite nicely. Yeah.
That's quite good, you know, a very personal project to work on together, your own home. So tell me a bit more about that. Like, where is it? What was involved?
Yeah, so we bought a property 10 years ago with one of my best friends. It's sort of a way in. We couldn't afford to do it on our own, so we went 50-50 with him. We had flatmates and things. And as time went by, we went through this really extensive process of joining together with our neighbour to sort of subdivide our properties, and it let us essentially have the backyard to our current place. And that's where Libby and I have built our home. It's on 280 square metres. So by all accounts, it's pretty tight down a hill too. But it was amazing just to have that chance to explore our design process and our thinking around design and how sort of considered design can still be generous. It doesn't need to be big, and it can still function adequately as a family home, and sort of just rehashing that. And one of the main moves that we sort of did was pushing the built forms to the outside of the property, which sort of allowed us to carve out this soft natural landscape inside these big courtyards and gardens and things. And so for an 85 square meter home, we probably have a larger garden than most, but it's just a case of, I guess, reconsidering how we place architecture and sort of that city fabric.
And other than, I guess, what are some of the biggest challenges? Obviously, you talked about when you're cutting into land to build this.
Yeah, as we didn't have much space, we sort of wanted to create this. It's a generative design. So what we've built now, the idea is that we can add to it as time goes by, as our family grows. But in order to do that, we sort of had to create that land, which is down a steep bank and sort of an area which was bizarre. It was full of discarded car tires and batteries and rubbish and stuff that people left behind. And so we carved that out and then created this sort of base that we could then put a two-story building on. And it was a real challenge in the sense that we had this tiny driveway and we had these concrete panels which we got cast off-site, and with the relief that we sort of this relief pattern that we spent quite a lot of time on. And so it was really stressful bringing those in with, you know, two cranes and stacking those and this, but we were lucky. It's had an amazing builder who's a good friend of ours, and as sort of the project developed, we, Libby and I, had a lot of time just to sort of finish things up ourselves. We did a lot of the linings inside and finishing, but that sort of connection with the project makes it special too.
Yeah, it must really feel at home.
It does, yeah. Yeah.
No, that's mad. So you talk about your own build, and I know that you've done a lot of cool projects to date. So kind of where do you draw inspiration from when you kind of take on a new project?
I think it probably comes back to our process around people's behaviours and how they live in space. I think people's routines and what they do in their day.
Where and how do you draw inspiration when you kind of take on a new project?
Yeah, it fundamentally starts with the people, and it's a really interesting process in, I guess, human behaviour, understanding how they live, what are their routines that make up their daily life, and we sort of explore that with them to make sure that the end result is something that speaks to them. So it might be around them enjoying a cup of tea in the morning sun, or it could be about spending time outside with the kids, or these little moments that are sort of created that when you sort of step back, it functions as a whole. And we spend quite a lot of time trying to understand that. And I guess the other side to that is context. And so that's, again, about place and site and making sure that these buildings and homes respond to that, if they're not in isolation. So we spend a lot of time trying to fold the landscape back into these spaces or exposing sort of elements outside, so that people are aware of the context that they sit. It's never in isolation.
And I guess going towards, I guess, natural inspiration, like, do you ever draw inspiration from nature or geological structures, landscapes, materials, flora, fauna? And then what learnings do you take from those things? Because a big part of Bremworth and our love of wall is we have a phrase internally called, like, clever by nature. So there's all these innate properties of wall, like stain resistant, and like, just nature spent what, millennia coming up with that. And then we spend so much time in other industries trying to replicate something that just naturally occurs. Is there any of that happen with you and your work?
I mean, we definitely would aspire to that. Sometimes it's considering how materials might respond over time. So something when it's shiny and new is one thing, but how it ages and changes over time is quite important. And it's sort of that grit that you can only get with time. And I guess that's an inspiration from nature. And I guess another aspect of that is specifically, I guess, asymmetry. So we find that there's a lot of beauty in asymmetry, and it's quite difficult to create and design, but it can be a lot more comfortable to live with. And yeah, we just find that sort of responds quite well with people and spaces.
100%. And I see that a lot in a kind of when people try and stage things, it's clearly staged, and it's so much harder to make something look like authentic and unstaged.
Yes.
It's like way harder skill than actually setting something up neat and nice.
Yeah. It just looks like it's meant to be.
That's cool. Okay. I guess we've talked about the beauty of nature and how, that kind of that eclecticness, the asymmetry is what makes it beautiful and unique. But also we've got to, I guess, pay respect to the recent unpredictability of nature. And obviously that's caused by our impact on the planet. So as an up and coming, young architect, what considerations do you feel, in your opinion, need to be taken around nature, wetlands, green spaces, and this increasing unpredictability of nature when you're kind of designing a project? And
I think where we place architecture and design fundamentally needs to be perhaps rethought a bit, because as we've sort of seen, that ultimately it's going to do what it wants to do, and if we start to control that, we'll never win there. So that's quite refreshing to, I think it's a chance to sort of reset and think about that. It's a, there's a lot of change locally with materiality and building design systems around how we connect to the land and, foundations and building construction methodologies. So again, it's sort of like assessing how things have responded in earthquakes or on floods, and what works and what doesn't. And sometimes it's that the tried and true methods that have been around for 100 years actually hold up. And sometimes there's these opportunities to sort of re-explore things again. So that's exciting.
What do you think are like some of the biggest challenges we face moving forwards in regards to that? Like,
it's unpredictable at the moment. It's quite hard to chase. But I think adoption of these new systems by people, if we can sort of get in behind them at a granular level, new processes and materials that are mindful of where we are, then hopefully that can be implemented in larger change than the larger construction systems that we see.
Because currently, like lots of the houses that we see around, particularly in Auckland, there's lots of like cladding or maybe the irrigation systems and stuff in place are not as robust as they should be.
Yeah.
Is that more working closer with builders and local council to kind of put things in place?
Yeah, I think it's sort of choosing appropriate materials for their context, and we've sort of probably been guilty of that historically in New Zealand, trying to adopt a typology or a aesthetic that doesn't really suit where we live. And you can see through the 90s, it all came unstuck with a lot of the sort of plaster systems that did not work at all.
That's all good. So we talked around councils and builders working together.
Yeah, and I think we've also got a nice responsibility to think about how we use resources. So whether it's water, rain water catchment systems, and how that can be used efficiently, because you can see that in these events, the systems become inundated, and there are processes in place, but I think we can always do better at that.
100%. I think it's really be cool. I don't know, I'm a bit of an outsider, but New Zealand developing its own identity around like what home should look like in different regions. So overseas, like in the UK, because it's a much older place, there's certain towns and stuff where you have to have a thatch roof and you have to be true to the architecture of that region.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a double-edged sword in regards to you don't have the creative freedom to express yourself as an architect, but do you think it's still important to respect the area? And
I think that's a huge part of it. And this, designing local, designing appropriately for the environment also creates its identity. It doesn't have to always be looking back. We can look forward and sort of develop that and enhance it. But I think ultimately, if we work within those principles, we end up with a better result anyway, rather than trying to impose something from another place that isn't really suited.
Totally. And how do you integrate this sustainability into your process?
I guess while it can be integrated more obviously through material items and processes, I think we believe that real change can be made through a meaningful consideration of scale. So if people are willing to consider what is enough rather than what they think they need, we can reach a balance where designs can become highly refined on a more modest footprint. And so by nature, using less of everything. And so I guess as a country, we sort of wrestle with the idea of intensification and traditional, the mindset of size equating to quality. I guess, you know, with living myself, we believe in creating homes that are more considered in scale, but to not compromise in any other way. And so you can still create those feelings of richness and spaciousness and materiality. But by being mindful of this, it leaves more scope and ultimately budget to consider local, sustainable and quality materials.
I love that. So the whole less is more ethos.
Yeah, you know, and it's not like less is more, and it can be beautiful, and it doesn't have to feel small in any sense of the world, and it can be more focused and more highly refined and finely tuned. Sometimes with these large spaces, you lose the intent of what you're trying to do. And if you then want to implement sustainable principles or materials or certain types and throughout the home, it can be quite hard because at a large scale, it can blow up quite quickly. So if we keep it focused and tight, we can kind of get the best of everything.
And it can look quite diluted, right, on a big scale?
Like, yep.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, figures you see thrown around, and don't quote me on this, but, you know, people say you live 80% or spend 80% of your time on like two areas of your home. yeah, you're right. People want these massive homes and there's like three people living in it.
That's right. Or they design it for a family and then the children leave, which is, you know, age old case, and then they swim.
Yeah.
And, or they close off a whole wing of the house. And we spend a lot of time in designing family homes, trying to think about how true people live and how it can still feel intimate and how it can still operate as a sort of comfortable and intimate home at that scale. And then when need be, everything opens up or you have other levels below that can kind of respond. But maybe they're just slightly lesser quality, or you kind of put it into the areas that count. And yeah, I find it does really respond with people.
I think it's cool. And I love the fact, the idea of having a smaller footprint, but having more outside space. And I think that really connects with being, the essence of being Kiwi and the outdoors. And, you know, we briefly chatted before this podcast. You have this like amazing landscape everywhere you look around us, and all these amazing natural elements. I think just being able to see more of that,
yeah,
rather than going, I've got this piece of land, I'm going to just use up every inch of it with my house.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge is to sort of focus on that beauty, right? And if you sort of do it well, the buildings and spaces just become a part of the landscape and they sort of fold back into it. But and that sort of comes back to around sighting and context and how we place buildings and architecture within these spaces. So, you know, traditional grains of sort of urban housing and everything's plonked in the middle, and what it does to your natural environment around you is makes it quite constrained and limited. But if we shift things and focus things inward or outward in certain ways and are clever about how we place buildings, we can create really generous spaces on in very little area.
Yeah, that's cool. So what do you look for when choosing materials and furnishings for, you know, the homes that you're part of?
With regards to sort of natural materials?
Yeah, like New Zealand made. Is that kind of like top of mind for you, or is it more around like visually what it looks like? Or?
Materiality, I guess for us, it's all about honesty. So when you're layering the elements of a design together, a lot of effort goes into accentuating the qualities that make a material special, whether it's sort of local, ideally, or from nearby. And so if we get this right, the impact of each should be amplified. And honesty is just about celebrating the material in its simplest form. It can be the hardest to achieve, but it can be really nice too. And yeah, so we aim to integrate local materials into our projects as it ultimately forms like a richer response to site, which is quite nice. And sometimes the material or furnishing can be a starting point for a project that's sort of stitched into the fabric of the design itself. And when you're lucky, you know, a client might bring along an object or a material that they want to sort of start the project with. And that's, again, like a really lovely starting point.
That's cool, man. And I guess for me, what is it? I personally like the idea or feeling and seeing that tactileness of natural products, mm-hmm. because it can anchor you to memories and real things out there in the world. But also it's, yep. when you feel something that's natural, whether it's like wood, stone, like it's, I don't know, it gives that feedback that synthetic stuff can't. So around that, what is it do you like about work with natural materials over synthetic materials?
Yeah. I think natural materials, you're right, they seem to sing. And so when people experience this up close, whether it's sort of timber, wood or stone, they can relate to them. It sort of brings a personal response and memory around that. And so using these sort of delicately within a house or in a focused way helps to form the stories and those moments around people's behaviours that sort of speak to a feeling of belonging. At the end of the day, they feel a part of that space and those materials that they may have brought with them or sort of folded into the house. Yeah.
I feel like it has like a positive permanence. Yes. So we know things like plastics and stuff now are permanent, unfortunately, with microplastics. But when you see wood or stone, you kind of connect to like mountains or structures that, you know, just are rooted and they've been here for ages.
Yes, and it gives you sort of opportunity to interpret it in a way. So it may not be a sort of a literal translation of a stone into the house, but it could be brought in through like a seat that's placed or a hearth or, you know, certain moments that when you step back, you go, ah, okay. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and you can tell more stories around it, right? It's so much easier to tell a story about, oh, this wood was when we, you know, did the foundations, we had to remove some trees, but then we repurposed it.
Yep.
That's so much more interesting than,
that's right. Fantastic. A house without stories is not much.
Cool. And I guess, like, what is it about the products that Brenworth sell, you know, wall carpet and rugs, what is it that aligns with your ethos as an architect?
Honesty, I think that sort of, I think Brenworth are wonderful exponents of sort of taking a material and delivering something in its simplest form. You sort of continually refine that over a long history, but there's always been a strong emphasis on that quality and doing it right. And more this response to local, sort of within the different ranges that you bring out, produces a product that resonates with people, sort of going back to that idea around natural materials, speaking to place.
Yeah, and guess championing, I know it's easier with a rug and carpet because it's a single item, but it's really heroing a single material within that process. And a big part of what we're trying to do is do more good, like focus on doing more good. There's always an emphasis on doing less harm, but I think if you shift your mind to doing more good and striving to find better options whilst admitting that, you know, we might not be there yet, but that's our intent, that's our purpose, I think.
Yeah, if you get the principles right, you can sort of fold in those other aspects a lot easier, you know, if you've got that core value.
It's easy to feel defeated, right? If you've got end goal and you're not quite there to go, oh, I give up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that's probably why we sort of come back to that idea on scale, saying, well, we don't always have an open checkbook or, you know, our clients that can do whatever they want. So it's sort of saying, how can we make the best of what we have and really celebrate that? It's not a negative at all. It's just an opportunity.
100%. I think that's a great way to look at it and kind of going, how much space can I afford based on my principles versus the other way around?
Yeah.
You know, I can afford this space, but I'm going to have to sacrifice my beliefs and principles and what I want in my home
to get there.
So have you specified any Brenworth products in your home or to others, and what's your favorite, what you like?
A lot. Samurai is a go-to for us. We use that in our own home, you know, and lots of other projects now, but we find that in having a space that people can come to, it's quite a different experience to going to a showroom. And so when people come in and they walk into the bedroom, they go, oh, what's about this? And they say, oh, the carpet, you know, it's, this is how it feels, or this is what it looks like. It's really hard to get a sense of that scale with natural materials around you. And sort of the, I guess the palette that we used in our spaces, we've tried to sort of promote the best qualities of each. Yeah.
Is there anything particular around like the designs that, you know, we produce at Bremworth that resonate? Like, is it, what is it about the product? Is it the color palette? Is it
the color palette? It's sort of back to that, I guess, the range being in a sense local. It sort of seems to be, you can see where it's come from a lot of the time. Asymmetry is a quite nice thing as well. Again, it just like feels like it belongs rather than this perfect thing.
Perfect imperfections.
Yeah, so hard to do.
It is. So taking care of the planet is obviously going to take all of us going good together to, I guess, achieve that. What role do you feel like Artex can play in this mission to do more good? And
I think we've always got the opportunity at the front end to educate people on processes and principles. Often, I think if we can do those principles well at a finer scale, a home's a really good example of this. You know, it's a small scale. Everyone can relate to a home and what that is. And if they feel comfortable at that level and you can implement those changes, then when they go out into the wider world, they sort of feel more comfortable to expect that as well.
100%. And what's central, like a central value to you as an architect? Like if there's the Ollie Booth mantra, like what is central to what you and Libby do that you kind of try to stay true to and everything you touch?
I guess honesty, so materials, people, relationships, and always just doing our best to promote what is around us. You know, it's our job just to provide something to be in, but if we can focus on what's around us and see that in a special way, then we've done a job.
Awesome, man. Thanks for chatting to me. It's been cool. Good to hang out.
Thank you.
I'm going to do my little my outro now.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Toi Manahu Designers Institute of New Zealand podcast. Keep an eye out for the next episode. If you enjoyed the insight shared today as much as I did, please give it a share on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to tag Toi Manahu Designers Institute of New Zealand. And for those of you who want to show a little extra support, please give us a rating on iTunes as it helps get these amazing stories out to more listeners.